These bandanas make it hurt. Welcome to the Breaking Down the Bytes podcast. Interested in the IT field and looking for a way to break in? Are you a college student or looking for a career change? The IT industry is booming and has tons of opportunity. It's vast, complex, and can be overwhelming, but we can help. Come along as we break down some of the barriers as your insider to the tech industry.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's edition of Breaking Down the Bytes. As usual, I'm driving the bus. I'm your host, Pat. You can find me on Twitter at Layer8Packet. That's the number 8. You can find Kyle, who is with me as well. He's on Twitter, too, at Daneth256. Alex, you're here, too. You can find Alex and the show at Breaking Bytes Pod. So we're pretty active on Twitter. So come say hello. Three Stooges back with you again, all together. Here we go. Rock and roll. Kyle, what's up, man? How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Can't complain. Where's your question at, Kyle? You ask me the same question every week.
We got no weather this week. We're not doing it.
I was getting ready to ask.
I was refused this week.
See, now it's a conscious thing. You're like, oh, yep. Now you're aware of it. Yep. Now I'm not going to do it on purpose.
Now I know. Get off my lawn.
That's it. That's it. Kyle, good to have you as always. Mm-hmm. Alex, it's good to have you too. Always here. Rocking and rolling. Sure. Dinner time out there on the left coast. Or closely after dinner time, I should say. But now what's up, man? How you been?
Yeah, not too bad. Nothing new to report. Chiefs are in the Super Bowl. That's kind of a bummer.
That's it.
Outside of
holding
that.
Steady. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here in PA, we hear about the Eagles. So that's now you're looking at the Chiefs from a sad perspective, and I'm hearing about the Eagles from a sad perspective. So, it's like I can't get away from it. I just can't get away from it. We're in the area. It's just it's news 24/7. It's all about Eagles. So for those of you not aware, American football Super Bowl is next week. So we're going to take off next week so we can watch some football. But Super Bowl is next week, so get your bets in while you can. So this week I think was a little different. Trying to think of ways to keep the show fresh and new, and trying to keep y'all coming back and listening to us and supporting us, which we certainly appreciate. But we've had this idea for a while, so we're just going to kind of roll with it. And this is the first of its kind, sort of thing. So the end of this episode, you like it, hit us up, let us know. If you don't like it or want us to change something or add something to it, let us know as well. Always looking for feedback. Hit us up on any one of our socials, your platform of choice. Just let us know. But this week, we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into a particular subject. And then what we'll do after, I would say maybe a day or two after when this podcast is released, we are going to do an accompanying YouTube video that kind of does a demo or a spotlight on what we're going to talk about. So this week, I guess I'm up to bat first, since it was sort of my idea. We're going to kind of deep dive into Azure, public cloud, Azure obviously being Microsoft's brand of public cloud, and not necessarily like a network focus, just because all three of us are network folks, but more of just a general fundamentals intro, sort of deep dive into, A, what it is, B, what it's used for, and then C is, some of the nitty gritty nerd stuff, and then the accompanying video will basically line up, how to do A, how to do B, how to do C, just some basic things. So here we go. So, Alex and Kyle, you're going to do some questions along the way, depending on where you see fit. So we're going to be excited for that, and kind of think that generates a lot of banter and good conversational piece. So why not? Here we go. It's just on the internet for the rest of our lives, so whatever. Here we go. So what could go wrong, right? Let's go. Let's do it. I picked Azure because generally that's kind of the world I live in at the moment. Like I said, not only from a networking perspective, but as you learn as you learn networking in your piece or whatever, whatever public cloud you're dealing with, you learn other things along the way as well. So, just to kind of back up, last May, I think it was May or June, somewhere in there. I took the Azure 900, AZ 900, which is basically the fundamentals exam, and passed it on the nose. So I got the exact score you needed to pass. So I had like no wiggle room at all. But hey, a pass is a pass, right? You don't go to you don't go to med school and get graded on what number you came in your class. Everybody's called doctor at the end of the day, right? So it's all good. So
AZ 900.
That's right. Amen. So the AZ 900, like I said, is your sort of break-in point to Azure. And it kind of just gives you the overarching view, the intro into Azure. So kind of talking about that here, and you get a lot of things, right? So Azure, obviously the big three in the Azure game, or I should say in the public cloud game, are AWS, Azure, and then GCP. And I know Oracle has a smaller cloud. I think HP has a smaller cloud now. Alibaba has a smaller cloud. So there's a bunch of tinier players that kind of make up the rest of it. But the big three that you're going to see at any one of your places are going to be AWS, Azure, and GCP in that order. So AWS is the biggest market share. Azure coming in second, and then GCP coming in third. I guess they're still considered the bigger player. So I'm kind of talking about what publicly you hear all these different terminologies, right? The public cloud, private cloud, hybrid, hybrid cloud, things of that nature. Public cloud is just that, right? It is basically whatever flavor you pick. Obviously this one focusing on Azure, they basically own it all, right? They own the hardware, they own the their network, their infrastructure, yada yada, and you're just basically spinning things up inside their network, inside their infrastructure, right? So, and it's accessible using the public internet, right? You're riding the public waves to get there. So so that basically makes them available to anyone who wants to use it or purchase it. Right, it's out there to use and to whatever fits your needs, that sort of thing. So kind of go from there. The other thing you hear about on the opposite side of the public cloud is the private cloud. It's computing services or whatever you're throwing up there either over the internet or private internal network connection, and only you kind of decide who gets to what users get to leverage those services instead of just, the general public, right? So you kind of have, it's like your own piece of the public cloud, but you're delegating who gets to use it, right? That sort of thing. So technically they call that, private, right? So it sort of looks and feels and acts like a public cloud, except the customer, you own it or lease it, or have exclusive access to it, right? To the actual hardware. So you're writing your own stuff that's dedicated, to you, right? So that's kind of the general gist of the private cloud. So, or then you have a hybrid cloud, which I think is a lot of today's market. So you kind of have a hybrid cloud, hybrid environment, whatever you want to call it. So you have computing environment, right? That combines both of them, right? That's what hybrid is, right? That's pretty common sense. So you basically, it's a combination of public and private clouds, and you scale private infrastructure into the cloud, right? So that's kind of the idea between the hybrid. You kind of get the best of the best of both worlds. So just wanted to throw some terminology out there as far as what you may hear, things of that nature. So, and then you kind of get into the shared responsibilities, model, right? So who owns what, that kind of thing. And there's a bunch of, different, things out there as far as, or different examples, I should say, of, who owns what, right? The further, I should say, the more control you give away, the less you own it, right? Can kind of go right down the list, right? If you're going to give responsibility to someone else, then you know, you own less and less of that, right? That sort of thing. So kind of that's one, again, I wanted to kind of throw some terminology out there, for those that may be, you know, new to the cloud for the first time. So, and obviously everybody has a different pay scale as far as what costs money, what doesn't cost money, things of that nature, go from there. But, you know, whichever one you choose, right? You know, they have their own pay scales as far as what they're charging you for and what comes for, you know, quote unquote free. So that sort of thing. Any questions from there, fellas? And jumping in.
Yeah, I think you covered that pretty well.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, I'm studying too, and that sounds like good advice right there. You know, good information.
Good intel.
Yep.
Right. Don't tell anybody, right? Yeah. Just talking into the ether.
Nothing here to add yet from me. When you get to the real technical parts, I'll put you on the spot. Right.
Oh, here we go. This is where the benefits of editing come in. I look like a genius then because I can basically Google it, say it, and then edit the dead airspace out. Be like, oh, that guy really knows his stuff. He answered that really quick. Yeah, all right.
Oh, man, so, you're going to have to edit that out. Don't tell him.
Yeah, I know. I give away my secrets. Yeah. So kind of talking benefits of cloud computing, right? So people say, okay, what's the benefit, right? Is there a benefit from going on-prem to the cloud? Like, what does that look like? Blah, blah, blah. And for years, I think the cloud was really expensive, and I think it still is. It's still kind of out there, but I do think the benefits really kind of, at least in this point, outweigh some of the knots, right? So I think from a general perspective, the cost savings or the benefits of cloud computing are economies of scale, right? I think we've said this before on the show, like, you know, you can literally spin up a virtual machine or whatever you need in literally minutes, versus, you know, years ago you had to order hardware, wait for it to come in, and, you know, VMware licensing and, you know, chop that server up into, you know, VMware or ESX, whatever you're using, and then kind of allocate from there. But now in the cloud, it's basically, you know, minutes. You have a virtual box at your fingertips in, you know, a couple of minutes, which really, I think, grows to the, I should say, speaks to the scale of things. You can kind of really go from zero to hero for as much as you want in a couple of minutes. So, the other part of that is total cost of ownership or TCO. You'll hear that a lot. Electricity, internet, cooling, things of that nature. All of that is technically wrapped into what you're paying for fee for the cloud. Right. If they can offer that stuff sort of in bulk to many customers, it's going to be cheaper for the individual customer. So I think the TCO definitely is something to look at from the benefits of the cloud, things of that nature. And you're not worried about cooling data centers or anything like that, or electricity, you know, internet pipe, right? Especially for Azure and some of the public clouds, you're basically using their internet. So that's all wrapped into the price of whatever you need, whatever you're spinning up. So things of that nature. So there's definitely some cost savings there, auto scaling, things of that nature. That's definitely a really attractive option with the cloud. So again, high availability is another one, right? So you're building things in different zones, and we'll get to that in a minute. Or availability zones, scalability, right? So you can basically scale up or scale down as needed. Elasticity, right? So again, it's more of a scalability thing, right? It's the ability for that VM or that system to basically automatically grow and shrink based on the application's demand, right? So that elasticity, you know, feature as well. So you're basically only paying for what you're actually using, instead of, you know, hey, if you have a physical server sitting there, and you, even though you have it chopped up into different virtual servers, you're still paying for that stuff, even though that application may not be used, right? That sort of thing. So, with that comes reliability, predictability, right? So you have your SLAs and, you know, things of that nature, availability sets and zones again, which we'll talk about, that kind of thing. So it's very, the pros are really kind of really coming into their own sort of thing. So it's, you know, the cloud looks better and better as kind of time goes on. So there's a couple different models, I should say, of the cloud. And this isn't just for Azure. This is kind of just a cloud overview. You get these in any one of the big providers, but, you basically have, they call IaaS or infrastructure as a service, right? So basically, your compute, your storage, your networking resources are all on demand. You basically pay as you go, right? So again, virtual machines, networking, load balancing, firewalls, things of that nature. That's all infrastructure as a service, right? Your actual gear, you know, that sort of thing. The next one we have is platform as a service. So that's basically, you can do development, you know, do a dev environment in the cloud. Sometimes they refer to it as cloud native, right? So it's basically built for the cloud. And you'll see that a lot too in the last couple of years, like a lot of these third party vendors, right? Cisco and Palo Alto and, you know, pretty much name your third party. They're basically building now, instead of just actually packaging their service or their whatever you're, you know, say I'll just take Palo for an example, for, you know, instead of just making a virtual version, a VM version of their firewall, they're rebuilding it from the ground up, saying it's cloud native. So it literally works. It's built for the cloud, instead of trying to stuff a VM version of their firewall and stuff it into the cloud and try to, you know, square peg, round hole, you know, kind of thing. So you'll hear that quite a bit. Cloud native is a buzzword kind of going around, you know, these days. But the platform as a service, it includes your infrastructure, but it also includes like that middleware kind of thing. You'll hear that middleware term thrown around quite a bit. So development tools, like business intelligence services, database management, things of that nature, that's included in the platform as a service. And it's also designed to support like complete web app, like life cycles. So like building, testing, deploying, managing, updating, that sort of thing. That's all platform as a service. And you can upload code packages and have them run without actual access to the underlying hardware as well. So that's kind of that cloud model is all those couple of five or six bullet points are platform as a service. And you'll hear that, you know, quite a bit. So, and then the other one here is a popular one the last couple of years. They call it SaaS, right? Software as a service, right? So you basically, you don't own any of it, right? So think of software as a service as big one being Office 365, right? You just, you know, it's available from the web or it's available from the client, and you basically do what you want with it, and you don't really see any of the back end of it. So it's basically, you know, building cloud apps over the internet and or, you know, Gmail or calendaring or, you know, like I said, Office 365. Those are a couple of the examples of the SaaS. So everybody seems to have a SaaS program nowadays. It just seems to be the way the world is going. So, and you, like I said, you really only have access to the configuration or the front end, if you will. You don't have access to any of the back end. The last one here, I feel like is a little, I don't say newer in the last couple of years. I think it's gaining more steam, but it's serverless. So, there's still servers there, but you just don't have to like deal with them, right? So even with like the platform as a service, you still have to choose an app service that you want to run. And with platform as a service, right, scaling is still your responsibility. You still have to say, hey, I want to go up or I want to go down. Serverless is basically you're not worrying about any of that. You're basically not worrying about choosing the right plan. You're not worried about scaling. Basically, serverless can mean that you might pay $0 if you don't use the actual service, right? So there's a couple different Azure specific. So you have like things like Azure Functions or Kubernetes or SQL Database, serverless, Cosmos Database, things of that nature. Those are all so Azure Functions and Kubernetes being the compute side of that, and then SQL Database and Cosmos Database are the database side of that, but they're all serverless. So you don't have to worry about any of the underlying services with that. So that's an interesting take. I think going forward is going to be quite popular going forward as the cloud continues to evolve and mature. So a couple of things there from that perspective as far as some of the cloud model types. And again, it's not cloud specific. AWS, Azure, GCP, they all have the same sort of flavors wrapped around it. And to be truthful, and I don't know if you guys think the same way as well, but I think the cloud services, the public cloud anyway, is very similar, but they all just have their different naming nomenclatures. So, serverless is still serverless across the board. Now, AWS may call it something different than Azure. Azure may call it something different than GCP, but it's still the same underlying core function, right? So I think it's very, I think it's very relatable. It just depends on which environment that your company is using that you sort of have to hone in on the nuances of whatever cloud you're using.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say I wouldn't be shocked if it's like 75% is nearly identical with a slightly different GUI.
Yep. So. Yep. Completely agree. Yeah, and I've worked in both. Actually, I've worked in all three, but the two I have experience with the most are AWS and Azure. I have been in the GCP stuff, but it wasn't for very long. So, but yeah, basically they have their they have their own what they call things, but at the end of the day, they're the exact same thing, right? So, just keep that in mind that there's a lot of information swirling around in your head right now, trying to kind of wrap your brain around it. But if you learn one, then you kind of have you're sort of over halfway there of learning the other two, the other two big ones. So just keep that in mind. I guess the next part we'll kind of talk about is the sort of like the core architectural components of Azure. So things like region pairs, things of that nature. So basically regions are geographical, regions that Azure has a presence in. I believe they have 60 or 65, something like that, regions worldwide. Not accessible by everyone. It really depends. So for example, there's regions like specifically for the U.S. government. I think China has a region as well, and I think that's restricted in some aspects. So again, it depends on where you're at and things of that nature, but I think there's about 60 regions worldwide that you can, stick some stuff in. And basically what they also have is they're called a region pair. So each region has another region in which it's treated as its pair. So, and they're almost always in the same geographical area. And so, for instance, depending on where you are in the world, your country has different data storage laws. So if you're in a paired region, those regions have the same laws. So like I know over in the EU with GDPR, things of that nature. So that was hot a few years ago where the countries store their data and how it's stored, right? Each one has their own sort of laws. So whatever regions over or a couple regions are over there in the EU, whatever their paired region is, has, that region also has the same set of GDPR laws, that kind of thing. So just keep that in mind. With choosing regions, you kind of have to go by your guidelines of what country you live in. The data connection between the pairs is the highest speed available. So I don't know if they actually tell you what the speed is, but it's up there. Obviously, you're riding Microsoft's backbone. You're screaming pretty good. So the way that works then, as far as like rollouts and stuff and updates to Azure, and I will say Azure does mess with the GUI and whatnot quite a bit. So like I always get frustrated, but like, oh, like I'll go in here like one day and then go in the next day and it's like, oh, it's completely moved around. You're like, where did this go? I was just in here yesterday. Yeah, that kind of thing. But software rollouts are deployed to one region of the pair, and then the other region is not touched. So they don't break, both regions at one time if something were to happen. If multiple regions go down, one region of each pair is treated as a priority, right? So you get that region redundancy, kind of deal. So like, for example, like if you're in Canada, Canada Central and Canada East, those are a pair. Europe is North Europe and West Europe. Those are a pair. Here in the US, it's East US and West US is a pair. East US 2 and Central are a pair. North Central U.S. and South Central U.S. are a pair, and so forth and so forth. So, you know, it's geographically specific as far as what your pairs are. So, sovereign regions, like I mentioned earlier, Azure government or U.S. Specifically U.S. and China. So those are the two that are off limits. So. And then within regions, they do what they call availability zones. So they're basically regions within availability zones, right? So you have, they call it the Americas, right? So you have Brazil, South, Canada, Central, and Canada East, so forth and so forth. So there's like six or eight basic regions within these availability zones. And so if you're looking to scale, or I shouldn't say scale, but if you're looking for true redundancy, you definitely want to have a presence in multiple regions because they spread across multiple availability zones, right? So the hope is to not have two availability zones have issues at the same time and your stuff is in both of those regions or both those availability zones. So at all, you can look this up on Azure's website. They have all the pairings that you would need. So if you're looking for something specific, that you certainly head there, and they have all the information that you could ever want on Azure or how that works. So, and then from there, they break it into what they call resources groups, subscriptions, and management groups. So basically, a subscription is just a billing unit, right? So you clump resources into, or I should say resource groups, into a subscription. And then basically at the end of the month, the bill comes and you can see what your, what that resource group or what that subscription is costing you, you know, per month. Yeah, that sort of thing. And again, you can organize resources into completely distinct accounts if you want, you know, things of that nature. But yeah, subscription, you can just look at that as like a billing unit. So all your resources go into a resource group, which if you're familiar with Windows, you can kind of compare that to like a file folder, like the folder structure within Windows. That would be a resource group. Like a folder would be a resource group. And then basically the resource group then ties to subscriptions, however many resource groups you have ties to the same subscription. And then when the bill comes, it's kind of that hierarchical structure of, okay, this is costing me X, you know, whatever that is. So that's kind of how they break that out. So that was kind of the core, quote unquote, infrastructure, or how the kind of Azure breaks down globally as far as regions, availability zones. Any questions from you guys?
I thought that was a good point that you brought up about spreading the resources across like places with the same laws.
Yep.
Because that was definitely something I wanted to thought. I was like, yeah, whatever. You throw a server here, you throw a server there, you share it, you know, you have redundancy everywhere, but it's like, yep, if the laws don't match. Yeah.
Yeah. You're
catch
in trouble.
Yourself in. Yeah, definitely.
Right. You're in trouble. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so those are just some of the core kind of basic options, or the basic functionalities of Azure and how they kind of spread that out. So the next sort of section here I have written is basically like just some compute and networking services. Right, so from a compute perspective, you know, obviously everybody's familiar with a virtual machine. Again, infrastructure as a service, or IaaS, we talked about a little earlier. You basically take an existing machine from your environment into the cloud. So you basically copy it up there into the cloud, and now it just runs on someone else's guts, right? That kind of thing. So basically, it's you know, primarily Windows or Linux operating servers. You know, they have several flavors of each. From the Azure store, and we'll get to that in a minute. And basically, you're just running a slice of physical machines shared with other customers. That's the cloud in an entire nutshell. You basically have a slice of massive, massive physical machines, and you're sharing it with everybody. that is the cloud in a nutshell. So, but you do have full control over that machine as if it was sitting in your on-prem data center or co-location. You know, again, it's you have, I think there's like over, I don't know, like 200 different virtual machine types you can choose from. So each type is, you know, different. You can select the number of CPU cores, speed, how much RAM to give it, disk space, things of that nature. Things is like I said, there's like 200 options depending on what you're looking at. Now, from spinning stuff up inside the environment that I work with, mainly in Cisco and Palo, they actually have recommendations on, okay, look, you're looking to run this. Here's the recommendation that we recommend you using. So you're not like left guessing like, oh, is this enough? Or, oh, is this going to scale for me? Or, oh, what's that look like? They basically say, hey, if you're looking to spin up a Cisco 8000V, your Azure, what we recommend is Azure, whatever the, guts are, 16 gigs or, 8 CPUs or 8 cores, 16 gigs of RAM and, whatever space. So it's not like you're left guessing. Like I said, you kind of have all these third party vendors have written, instructions and guidelines on how to sort of pick that. So it's not, you're not completely guessing into the wind. The other part of that then too is what they call virtual machine scale sets or VMSS. So those are for elasticity. So you're basically taking two or more virtual machines running the same exact code, and then you load balance in front of them, and then the load balancer basically directs traffic to those machines randomly, right? So, and then you basically you're able to add more machines as your demand grows, right? And you're able to, at the same point, you're able to reduce machines as demand slows, right? So again, elasticity, things of that nature. I think you can handle up to like 100 VMs in a single like scale set, something like that. I think it's around 100. So there's some really cool things you can do with the scale sets. But again, they're all the exact same machine running the exact same code, and you basically grow or shrink as you need. And you can create multiple scale sets if you wish to, and kind of go from there. So I think those are pretty cool. The other thing too, within Azure, app services. So you're basically, you're like running code in the cloud, right? So, you basically give your code and configuration to Azure, and they'll run it, right? So it's a app service that you basically stand up and hand it off, and off you go. You get the promise of performance, but you don't actually have access to the underlying hardware. So app services are technically like a platform as a service, a PaaS. So that's an interesting one there as well. Again, you write your code, you give your code and configuration to Azure, and they basically run it, and you don't have any access to the underlying. Underlying hardware. So, again, app services, that's more for devs and things of that nature. But that's definitely a compute, service, if you will. The next one, we've talked about this on the show a couple times, containers, right? So, containerized technology, this is the same kind of thing. Basically it's another paradigm for running code in the cloud, right? And they contain everything the app needs to run in the image, right? So it's the fastest and the easiest to deploy, Examples are Kubernetes, right? That's a popular one. Runs on a cluster of servers, right? Enterprise grade, that kind of thing. And Azure has its own flavor. It's called ACI, Azure Container Instance. So it's a single instance. It's the quickest way to deploy a container. But then if you want to do the big boys, you would go to the Kubernetes, the AKS, the Azure Kubernetes Service. So that runs on a cluster, and that's more of an enterprise grade, type of thing. So I think that's pretty neat. And I think we've talked about that before. Containers are really cool, and we're trying to still get a container like an SME on here. We want to talk about containers, but none of us here are kind of that great at them, so we don't want to do you a disservice. But if anybody's a container expert out there who works with them day to day, hit us up, man. We'll have you on the show, no problem. We'd love it
for sure.
The last one, sort of here in the compute and compute service, I guess you would call it, is virtual desktop, right? So for years, it was Citrix ran the virtual desktops, or from a storefront, right? The Citrix storefront that was popular. Azure has their own virtual desktop, AVD. Aptly titled, right? Basically, it's a desktop version of Windows that runs in the cloud, right? Software is installed. Your software, your files available basically from anywhere. can even see your desktop on iOS or Android, apparently, which is kind of cool, or from any web browser, obviously. And then basically runs inside Azure. So, AVD is or any virtual desktop is really popular nowadays, because now you don't have to spend money on all this hardware, right? It's basically you just a terminal into a broker, into AVD or some sort of virtual desktop, and you basically have all the guts right on your desktop. So that's I think that's a really cool thing. And I know for a while there, Chromebooks were really hot, that kind of thing. And people were giving out Chromebooks to just basically have them remote into a desktop, a public virtual desktop. So, why have all that hardware locally on your machine if you're just going to remote into a desktop somewhere else? So I think that's cool there. So I see that really taking off, no matter what flavor of public cloud you're on, AWS, GCP, or Azure. I think a virtual desktop is kind of one of those core apps or core functionalities that you have. So now the nitty gritty stuff.
Evolve, I think, IP.
I did forget. Evolve IP has their own virtual desktop as well. Yes, go look them up. Now to the good stuff. The Azure networking services. This is where we get to talk some fun stuff, because obviously we're network folks. But basically, and again, terminology is very fluent in here. But basically, it's all virtual networking, right? There's no physical cabling. There's no physical routers, switches, firewalls. There's none of that. Basically, is all in Azure's backend, and it's basically just software at this point. You're just running on top of that. So you still have the core things. You still have subnets. Azure basically calls a cloud environment. They call it a VNet, right? A virtual network. But you still have subnets. You still have VPNs. You still have DNS running there. You still have those core type of things. What Azure also has is they call it Express Route, which is basically a high-speed private link into, or should say, connection to Azure. So for example, basically you can make Azure just another hop on your WAN or extension of your colo. Basically, you're just saying, "Hey, I need you're dropping a third party circuit, whatever that is, a gig, whatever it is, into your virtual environment, into your cloud, and then the other end ties to your on prem data center, and you're basically just extending Azure's just an extension of your colo." So we kind of played around with that where I'm at. It wasn't the right fit for us, but I could definitely see why that's needed, or why that would be attractive to some folks. If you're replicating a lot of info back and forth from on-prem to cloud, Express Route would be the way to do it, right? It's basically just a private link. It's not public or anything. It's not just raw internet or anything. It's just a point-to-point link that you basically tie to your Azure environment, and the other end of it ties into a physical location into your colo, and you're just replicating to your heart's content, that kind of thing. But it's high speed. I think the highest you go, I think the highest was 10 gig, I think. That may be higher now, but it was 10 gig at one point. But obviously the higher you go speed-wise, the more dollars you're pumping out. But I could definitely see that being useful if you're doing a lot of replication from A to B. So that's cool. DNS, again, you still have DNS in there. Azure does have a couple protection services in there. So like they do have DDoS protection for things that are public facing. Azure has their own brand of firewall. Personally, we use Cisco's and Palo's. So we use the third parties. But Azure does have a firewall that they do natively. NSGs or network security groups. So they're basically like you're thinking like VMware NSX or Cisco Tetration, Akamai GarterCore, things of that nature. So it's basically micro segmentation is basically what an NSG is. You're wrapping a firewall around each VM or each whatever you're running. So network security groups are definitely used for that. they kind of can be. Well, a
I'll
pain
stop you
sometimes.
Right there. I know we've been wanting to talk for a while now. I'm just kind of curious because AWS has something, security groups, the exact same kind of thing.
Yep.
And it just came up the other week that we had a situation where we ran into an issue at work because we were using both security groups and what AWS just calls network ACLs, which is really kind of like perimeter access lists that we're accustomed to using. I was just curious, when you've been using Azure and you're trying to do security, are you only using security groups, or, well, I guess you said you use firewalls as well, but do you know if they have the equivalent of, again, AWS calls them network ACLs, or they've gone away with that? So if you're not using a firewall, is that really like the only common way of doing security?
Yeah, I think so. We're using third-party firewalls, but then we're also using security groups inside, as well. So, like, for example, like in Azure, and it may be similar to AWS. It's been a while since I've been tinkering in there, but like in Azure, you can actually put the network security group either on the actual NIC, the virtual NIC of whatever you're using, or you can put it on, you can put it on an entire subnet, and then whatever's in that subnet gets the same security group. You can do it either way. I think in Azure, the best practice is do it at the subnet level, and then basically just you have to deal with it at the NIC level. But like, for example, our Palo Altos who sit out there on the internet, they their outside interfaces have NSGs on them to allow like SSH and things like that from certain IPs. So it's not just wide open, to the internet. But I think for the general use, I think it's just, tying the security groups to the subnets and then just, kind of letting it ride sort of thing. But so, yeah, there is multiple layers there. So we have a perimeter firewall, and then each VM and each core infrastructure piece has NSGs tied to them internally. So they're, so the east-west traffic is sort of locked down that way as well.
Right. Yeah, and I think this is something that I've only ever seen really come up in as the clouds really exploded. But previously, when I thought of a subnet, I kind of thought anything in the subnet is completely open to anything else in the subnet. And now with security groups and, would you say Azure calls them just network security groups? Yeah.
Yeah.
NSGs, yeah, with those security groups, this is the first time where I'm seeing people actually filter within the same subnet, within the same slash 24, just .1 and .2 in the same slash 24 might not be able to talk to each other because you're
right
of how your security groups are set up. And that's just, unless it's changed across the board, that's something that I've only really seen happen in these cloud environments. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. So when you deploy a VNet or a subnet inside a VNet, anything in that subnet right off the bat can communicate with each other. But like you said, as you start throwing security groups around various NICs, NIC cards and virtual NICs and stuff like that, then you really get into the granularity of, okay, I'm only allowing this to this or this to this, that sort of thing, depending on your environment and the way your, the security rules are laid out or what your IS department has, requirements for. But that's becoming a little more popular as far as, not only is your north and south traffic sort of locked down, but your east and west traffic is definitely getting there as well.
Yeah. So if you can't communicate between two servers of the same subnet, it's not immediately a switching issue or something like that. Just like you might very well have a security group applied to it. That's breaking it. And that's not something you used to think about.
Yep. Yeah, so as far as like from a network perspective in the cloud, it's a different mindset. Like I've had my days where I'm just like, oh my god, this is just insanity. What am I doing? That kind of thing. But it definitely takes a different mindset to kind of go from traditional physical gear to on-prem, or I should say, physical gear to virtual gear, and sort of they don't really they work the same way, but then they don't work the same way. I think for guys like us who've been working with physical gear for so long, we're used to having control from A to Z and sort of knowing, okay, what can break along the way because of our experience. But now in the cloud, it's like some of that stuff is abstracted from you as a network person, or from really anything, not just specifically the network. So the more it's abstracted, the more you're sort of kind of going in blind as far as, okay, this could, it could be this, but it could be this based off of, you know, X, Y, Z. So there's definitely a mind shift, I think, that's, you know, could definitely, you kind of have to be prepared for that when you're kind of shifting into the cloud, because it is not apples and apples. It's, you know, it is some apples and oranges stuff, and you got to be prepared for the oranges. All right, cool. Kyle, you good? Any questions there?
No, I mean, I would definitely say I was one of those people who were having issues with that, because, you know, back with our switching classes and stuff, like, you plug something in, you can see it's connected. There's no mystery of like what's going on. And now you're like, why don't I have communication? What's what's going on here? So it's, yeah, it's definitely.
Yeah. And I'll say this, this took me a little bit to kind of get my head around as well. I think AWS is the same way, or any sort of public cloud. Everything in, at least in Azure, everything is a, everything has an IP address. There's technically no layer two in Azure. It's all layer three and layer three overlay. So everything has an IP. Everything has to have a route to something. Like, there's no actual like VLANs or LLDP or there's none of that. There's no layer two technologies in Azure at all. It's all, everything has an IP address and everything is layer three routed. So that is a different sort of horse of another color, depending on, you know, how much experience you have kind of going from A to Z. But I'll just kind of throw that out there, that everything in Azure and most, I would say most public clouds are layer three. You're going to be routed from A to B, and it's all IP based. So just keep that in mind as you kind of grow into your cloud career, which can be difficult for some folks if they're used to working with layer two, or your mind takes you from a troubleshooting perspective. Okay. All right. Where's layer two? Oh, shit, I don't have layer two. I gotta go to the next, gotta go to the next layer, and kind of there, that has its own troubleshooting, you know, steps in there as well. So, just an interesting, you know, tidbit going forward. Yeah. So as far as the next kind of thing here is just like two more. So like they have their own delivery services as well, and I guess they in the delivery services they kind of encapsulate load balancing in there as well. So distribute basically, you know, traditional load balancer, distribute traffic evenly between multiple backends, right? They have an application gateway. So application gateways are it's basically like a higher level of load balancing, and they have so all layers, you know, through layer 7. I think the load balancer does layer 4. And then the application gateway does all layers, you know, layer 7 all the way down. And then with the application gateway, they have an optional firewall in there as well. So you can kind of control traffic as far as who wants to, you know, who's allowed to come through and who's not. And then they also have a CDN. So I think, Alex, I think you're going to talk about CDNs here in the next couple of weeks as far as some of this deep dive stuff and how some of you guys do it. But they have a CDN as well, content delivery network. Again, stores common, you know, static files, basically on the edge, closer to the users, right? So for improved performance, right? That kind of thing. And then what they call Azure Front Door, which is basically a load balancer, a CDN, and a firewall all in one. So that they packaged that and gave it a cool name called, you know, Azure Front Door. So that's cool there as well. And then they have a bunch of monitoring services as well. So they have Network Watcher, which basically, you know, gives you all kinds of stats and whatnot on the network piece of it. Express Route, like if you have an Express Route in your environment, they have Express Route Monitor. And then they also have Azure Monitor, which is basically the whole thing. So VMs and you know, things of that nature. They basically give you all kinds of insights and metrics and statistics and all that kind of crazy stuff. So, you know, so that's cool too. So just from a monitoring perspective, so you're not like flying blind into the dark of like, oh, this is really slow, or, oh, what's this doing? Well, I don't really know because we don't own the hardware. Well, they give you some decent monitoring tools, you know, wrapped around that. So that was kind of the network piece of it. Just a couple more here, and I know we're kind of getting up there, but just a couple of more. So a lot of storage options here. So again, storage, different flavors of storage, right? You have containers or blob storage, disk storage, file storage, you have multiple storage tiers, things of that nature. They have general purpose storage in different versions, right? So V2, V3, whatever. They have Azure. So they have like blobs, tables, queues, things of that nature. Azure Data Lake, which is, you know, obviously for the big boys, just throw stuff up there, and hot and cold storage, things of that nature. Again, you know, like I said, access tiers, hot, cold, and archive. You have a option of standard or premium tiers, storage tiers, I should say. Location, obviously, you want location closest to you for if you need to pull anything from that storage. They have redundancy or replication, so you can replicate that storage to another zone, whatever. So there's like a ton of options here for as far as like disk storage and things of that nature. You have the local virtual machine disks. You have managed disks. You have optimized disk, things of that nature. So it's a bunch of that stuff there. And then the other part too is a real big part, I should say, is the identity and access and security stuff. So IaaS, I guess, or IAM. I think Azure. AWS calls it IAM, Azure calls it IaaS, or Identity Access and Security. But it's basically identity, Azure Active Directory, things of that nature. You know, and there's you know, again, anything that has to do with security or finding out who somebody is, right? Giving people access to what they need, but not to, you know, least privilege, I guess, right? That's been, you know, thrown around the last couple of years. You want to give people what they need to work, but not too much. Yeah, you know, that kind of thing. It's exactly what they need and no more, no less. That sort of thing. So usually it's some sort of password, secret key, certificate, kind of prove, you know, who you are, that kind of deal. So basically Azure works off of, you know, has an identity management system. It's based off of their Active Directory, right? Instead of being on-prem, they call it Azure Active Directory, or Azure AD. It's technically not the same as Active Directory. Traditional AD does not work with internet protocols. Azure AD provides like identity as a service, like I mentioned before, you know, that kind of thing. You know, so instead of having to write code to handle like users, passwords, password resets, you know, things of that nature. So a couple benefits of Azure AD and that whole IaaS stack, if you will, obviously, you know, a little more secure in that aspect, reduced development time, right? It's easier to support central admin, right? Not that AD is not central admin, but single sign-on, right? So only one user ID and one password. And Azure AD integrates with other Azure services, which is nice, you know, depending on what you're trying to do. So like, for example, we threw up the Palo Altos, and they have they now do single sign-on with Azure AD as well. So there's a example of the integration stuff. So authentication, authorization, right? That's those terms are pretty standard nowadays. Authentication is you know, user providing who they are, right? User ID and password. Authorization is okay. What, you know, what are they permitted to do, right? That sort of thing. And you're trying to move away from all authenticated users having admin access, right? So the last couple of places I've worked, I've had a regular username and password, and then I've had an elevated admin username and password, you know, as well. So you have, you know, separation of duties there, that kind of thing. Then Azure comes with, you know, you can do Azure AD for like conditional access, right? That sort of thing. Multi-factor authentication or 2FA, MFA, you hear that a lot. So, you know, you do a username and password, and then it either does sends you a code or you know, a fingerprint, you know, something of that, you know, nature, that kind of thing. So it kind of has three factors, right? Something you know, like a password, something you have, like a mobile phone or access to email, and then something you are, i.e., you know, the fingerprint, that kind of thing. So you get two of those three. So let's see what up. Passwordless, I know that's become popular in the last couple of years. So you're using gestures to sign in instead of actual numerical you know, characters, things of that nature. So you're signing in using a PIN or biometrics or that kind of thing. So, or like the other thing too is, you know, the phone, say, oh shit. Or like for your MFA or whatever, like if you're using like a third party app, right? Microsoft Authenticator, Cisco Duo, Google Authenticator, things of that nature. You log into something, you get a pop-up saying, hey, you trying to log in? You can say yes or no, that kind of thing. So that's, again, a version of, you know, passwordless, you know, that kind of thing. Role-based access control, again, these are all sort of features of Azure AD, which is, you know, nothing crazy new. It's gaining popularity here in the last couple of years is zero trust, right? So basically you're just assuming that, don't assume everything behind the firewall is safe, right? So, zero trust is basically assuming that you've already been breached and you need to, you know, servers only need access to what they, you know, what they're supposed to, you know, that sort of thing. Everything else is, you know, locked out, if you will, or denied. So zero trust is a big one in the last couple of years. Again, and just some best practices as far as, you know, defense in depth, right? That sort of thing. So each layer of the OSI model has its own defense built-in, you know, mechanism. So, for example, the physical layer, right? Door locks, key cards, things of that nature. You know, the network layer is, you know, NSGs, right? The security groups talked about use of subnets, you know, denied by default, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, so forth and so forth. Some other cost things here as far as Azure goes, kind of set up rules and say, okay, look, you can get cost alerts and things of that nature. Choose to. Azure has outbound, so they charge for outbound data. So I think it's like, it depends on what it is or what region you're in. It's like 5 cents or whatever it is. I don't even know, but that's all on Azure's website. You're really interested into the dollars and cents of it. But basically you can set up cost alerts to say, okay, look, you know, hey, you went over this month by whatever. And then you kind of look in and say, okay, what do we spin anything up that would kind of spike this up or what that looks like, that sort of thing. So set your cost alerts for, you know, here's your baseline. Okay, now I know what my baseline is. Now I know what an anomaly is versus, you know, what, you know, whatever. So Azure has all of that. Azure also has a pricing calculator out there. I think it's azure.microsoft.com/pricing/calculator. And you can basically pump in your whatever you're trying to spin up and it'll tell you, you know, hey, it's going to cost you X amount, you know, per month. You know, you configure regions, tiers, subscriptions, support models. Is it dev? Is it test? You know, that sort of thing. Plug in your variables and it spits it out. So you kind of have an idea what that'll cost. Again, talked about TCO, right? That kind of thing. It's not just the cost of hardware. It's, you know, electricity, cooling, internet, rack space, labor, you know, setup, labor, maintenance, all that kind of stuff. You have to think of all of that as well. The other thing I like in Azure too is resource tags. So basically a tag is just like metadata, and then basically you can search things in Azure by tag. And there's a whole tagging structure on Azure's website that they kind of can say, hey, this is a best practice, or this is what some other, you know, that we recommend, you know, your tags be blah, blah, blah. And again, you can search by tags and say, okay, you know, no, you can't delete that because that runs, you know, whatever. So there's multiple tagging schemes or hierarchical schemes you can run for that piece. So governance and compliance, I won't cover a whole lot of it, but basically, you know, it's, you know, company rules and country rules, things of that nature. But what Azure does have is they call it Azure Blueprints. So basically, it's basically a template. There's subscription templates that with basically roles and policies already defined. And then basically you just deploy the blueprint to wherever you want, and it's uniform all the way across. So you're not recreating the wheel every time you want to, you know, spin a subscription up. So, Azure Blueprints is good for that, from a compliance perspective. Azure Policy, so it creates rules across all of your Azure resources, evaluates, compliance to those rules, and then, kind of applies them that way. Resource locks, right? So you can lock resources and, you know, you can't, you know, it's like read-only access, you know, that sort of thing. Again, using RBAC, right, role-based access control, you can restrict who has access to said locks, things of that nature. And you have the service trust portal, which is basically Microsoft's backend, kind of, you know, review a lot of this stuff. So for those of you that like the CLI, they do have the PowerShell out there. You can actually run the PowerShell or the CLI right from within the web browser and Azure's portal. So that's kind of nice as well. And if you run PowerShell locally on your machine, you can tie PowerShell to your Azure instance, and then, you know, if you're good at PowerShell, you can just go to town and goes right to your Azure instance. So you know, have at it. So I think on within Azure's website they call it the Azure Cloud Shell, but then PowerShell is local to your actual machine with the PowerShell app. So that's cool too. So some of you keyboard CLI warriors, you have your, you know, you're right at home with the Azure PowerShell stuff too. I think last but not least, here's ARM templates. So Azure Resource Manager, so, or ARM, you basically deploy and manage it's the deployment and the management service for Azure. So it's the management layer, I guess you want to call it, that allows you to create, update, delete resources called deployments. Again, that uniform template kind of feel to it. So that's nice and neat and orderly for you're trying to recreate multiple boxes and multiple things. You get the same feel every time with the ARM templates, which is kind of nice. So, and just like monitoring tools. So we talked about monitoring tools on your actual instance of your Azure. Microsoft has their monitoring tools as well. Azure Advisor, which basically analyzes resources and recommends things based on certain, you know, patterns. So it'll say, hey, you know, we recommend this, or hey, you're not doing this very well, try this instead, best practice, things of that nature. And then they also have what's called Azure Service Health, so that displays the overall health of Azure as a whole, not just your particular instance there. So just a couple of more monitoring tools at that. So that was kind of it. I know that was a lot, me talking and just kind of talking into the wind, but yeah, that was that's kind of Azure, and that's just it's based off of my notes from the Azure 900 course that I took, and cert, you know, that I passed what was it, last June or whatever it was. Just kind of breaking it down. That's not all of it, but that was kind of the major highlights of those. So figured I'd do a deep dive. And like I said, if you're looking to kind of get into Azure and seeing how it looks, I'll be doing a YouTube video. So basically like creating an account, logging in, spinning up a VNet, spinning up a virtual machine, you know, that sort of thing, getting it out to the internet, whatever. Maybe even do a load balancer depending on the time and, you know, kind of feel. But if you're listening to this and you want something specific, let us know. You can, like I said, hit us up on Twitter or email us, breakingbytespod@gmail.com. Whatever. If you want something specific that you want me to include in the video, let me know. I'm going to let this video drop on Tuesday like we normally do. And then I'll probably give it a day or two to get some feedback from everyone. So I'll drop the actual video like later that following week. I'm gonna say like probably like Monday or maybe the next Tuesday. So yeah, so that gives you a couple days to get your thoughts in. If you want to see something specific, I'll do in the video and then tie it to our YouTube channel and kind of get out there and see what's up. So I think Alex had his internet drop, so he's not here no more. But I'm sure he had a few questions. Maybe we'll hit them up and next week when we regroup and do a new episode. But Kyle, you have any questions on that?
No, I mean, you covered even more than I'd be able to ask. I think you've already filled in all the gaps that I may have had, and then some. It's great.
Right on. So, Kyle, you're going for your AZ900 soon, right? You have to schedule it.
I'm trying.
Come on, man.
Studying is so bad. I need your discipline. Whatever discipline that you have that you're like, I'm going to sit down and study, I need that.
That's it.
I need you to bottle it up and, I don't know, I'll buy it from you.
I'll send it over. So Kyle and I were kind of talking about this before we hit record, but studying's a tough one, depending on what you're doing and your day-to-day job and whatnot. But I carve out time. Like I put an hour a week or whatever it is, a couple hours a week, whatever. Normally on a Friday, I'll block out like a couple hours just because Friday is a little slower, like Friday afternoon or whatever. And so I'll put like from 1 to 3 on the calendar or whatever and be like, okay, look, this is my time. So then when people look for meetings and whatnot, like, oh, no, he's busy. That's right. Damn right I'm busy. I'm busy studying. That's what I do. So, yeah, I build time into my schedule. I'm like, look, you want me to support this stuff and build it? Like, I got to be able to like wrap my head around it and study it. So yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. That's what I did for the AZ900. I again, Friday afternoons or whatever it was, I put 2 hours on the calendar or whatever, and just basically did Udemy videos or LinkedIn Learning or whatever, whatever I could find for the Azure 900. So I'll be doing that again for the Azure 700, which is their networking cert. Maybe this year, we'll see. And then I'm sure I'll do it again for the Cisco DevNet. So it definitely helps because then people don't bother you if you see you're away or you're busy, that kind of thing. So it definitely helps to put yourself first and block out that time. So that's it, Kyle. Anything else before we get out? Like I said, I think Alex has some internet issues, so we're gonna let him slide out of here. But anything else from you before we wrap it up? We're just over that hour mark.
I think that's it.
Cool. We appreciate everybody joining this week as usual. Thanks for joining. And make sure you visit our website, breakingbytespod.io. You can subscribe to the show on your platform of choice. So there's links up there for everything. iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts. Shout out to Tim Bertino from the Art of Network Engineering podcast who specifically told me that he listens on Google Podcasts. So, put a rating there as well, Tim. If they have a rating system, throw it in there. So I told him I'd give him a shout out the next episode. So, but if you're on iTunes or any sort of platform, but mainly iTunes, because that's where a lot of our listeners come from, throw us a rating on there. That would be awesome. That'd be really helpful to get more eyes and ears listening to the show. Tell a friend as well. That always helps. Word of mouth is just as good these days, I think. Again, follow us on Twitter, Facebook. The Discord server is out there for everyone to join and get a little closer to us if you wish to. The invite is in the show notes of the show here. We have the listener survey that's out there as well. We've run that for the last couple of months, and we're getting some good replies. So the more we hear back from everyone there, then the better the show gets and, actually what you want to hear. So what topics you want to cover. So definitely hit that survey up and tell us what you think. And we don't know who you are. You're completely anonymous. We didn't ask your name. It basically just aggregates answers for us and puts in a nice pretty pie charts and, percentages. So just throw it out there. It's like 10 questions, whatever it is. So head over to the survey. Again, the link is in the show notes there as well. So that's it, Kyle. We will see you next week. We'll do it all over again. See ya.